You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts its money where its fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. Let's do this thing. We've got a stacked show lined up for you today. Steve Merrill's going to hop up and in. We're going to run down the NCAA tournament odds as far as the region, future line checks, overall future championship odds, and everything else in between. And oh yeah, we actually have 11 college basketball games on the board tonight. That's right, the Sweet 16 is on Thursday, but there's 11 games on the board tonight. There's a couple of interesting spots, actually, that we're going to be laying it down on. All right, there's a couple of interesting players in the NCAA tournament, and that's an understatement. Over the past couple of years, college basketball has lost a little bit of its luster to the mainstream due to the one-and-done factor. But even with the one-and-done in play, and this year we have a couple of one-and-dones. We have a couple of guys that have been around a couple of years. But either way, we've got a tournament, man, where there are a lot of dudes, man, that are at the top of this NBA board right now. And in fact, they're going head-to-head. Coach Nick's going to join us. Love talking basketball with Coach Nick. We always talk NBA basketball with Coach Nick, but I see that Nick's paying attention to what's going on in the tournament. I want to get his perspective on some of these superstar players in the tournament and how he thinks they develop into NBA players. Ashley Dawkins going to join us in studio. We're going to talk some NBA DFS. Got a full slate of basketball on the board tonight. You got Westbrook and you got Harden going. And you know, part of me wanted to squeeze both these guys into my lineup tonight. But I just didn't have the time to try to figure out to find six other scrubs, man, that was going to squeeze in there, you know, at under $4,000. But we got a nice cash lineup for you tonight. I don't know about a tournament, but a cash. It's rock solid. Rock solid NBA lineup I have for you. We'll see what Ashley Dawkins likes tonight. We'll get Ashley Dawkins take on the NCAA tournament as well. So, the NCAA tournament. We're into the Sweet 16 right now. And the first couple of days were anticlimactic. We talked about this on Friday, but we told you the business would pick up over the weekend, and it did. We had a lot of drama. You can't say, there were any classics, so to speak. There was some good basketball played. There was some bad basketball played. But it'll only get better as the heavyweights are still looming right now. Now, as far as the bettors are concerned, with the favorites and the underdogs, there wasn't that much of a discrepancy. The underdogs were 29 and 23. So, the underdogs won six more games, covered six more games than they lost. When I say 29 and 23, I mean against the spread, all right? The favorites were actually 40 and 12. Straight up. So there are 12 upsets as far as the favorites are concerned. Where the money was with the overs. And bettors were overjoyed by the over run, including myself. Man, you guys know I've never met an over that I didn't want to tap. All right, so the overs, was it 35, 16, and 1 to the over. But the problem is now the books have adjusted. They're not in the business of giving away money in Las Vegas, Nevada. They're in the business of taking your money. So you look at the totals for the Sweet 16, and they're freaking jacked. You know what's not freaking jacked right now? Tickets at Madison Square Garden this week. Holy crap, man. I'm not going to sympathize with a ticket broker all that often in today's day and age. Although I used to be what they called a scalper in my early days. Although I've done a lot of things in my time. So I understand all about markets. And I remember in 1993, I had 24 Stanley Cup tickets to the finals. All right. And it would have been the Montreal Canadiens against the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I would have been rich. I probably wouldn't even be standing here right now because I would have been so rich then that my life would have taken a different turn. It was one of those deals, man. Like, I would have got like $1,000 a ticket type of deal in 1993, and I only paid like $15 plus tax for these tickets. I had an inside connection. But nevertheless, my dreams were shattered like a broken beer bottle during spring break in Daytona, all right? Shattered. When the Los Angeles Kings beat the Toronto Maple Leafs, because even though it was Wayne Gretzky, it didn't have the same luster. And now suddenly, I'll tell you what, You don't have to be a ticket broker or a scalper to know they're trying to hawk tickets outside of MSG for Baylor versus South Carolina is a hell of a lot harder than it is hawking tickets for Duke versus Villanova. All right, I gave you guys a parlay. It was 48-1 for a reason, evidently. But three of the four teams are still left standing. And it's interesting because I warned you, out of my 14 parlay to win the regional brackets, was that Villanova was the shaky one. You know, because, I don't know, Villanova could lose to Duke. I didn't see Duke lose into the Gamecocks. It's chaos. It's carnage across the board right now. The brackets, everyone's brackets, have been busted up, all right? Busted up. But you know who else should be busted up? The referees. To me, that's the theme of this tournament so far. How bad the officiating has actually been. You know, we criticize the NBA officials, but at least you know what you're getting from the NBA, all right? They're going to screw one team. They're going to give the calls to the superstars. College basketball, you really don't know. But you go down the list, man, and there were a long list of teams who have been screwed over. Yeah, were they going to win the game? Maybe, maybe not. But they had their opportunities taken away from them. You know, phantom flagrant, tech on the Seton Hall Pirates against Arkansas after the kid on Arkansas actually freaking traveled. All right, VCU never had a hope in hell against St. Mary's. The referees had it in for the Rams right from the start. But then St. Mary's gets screwed against Arizona, a late call. Now, nothing was worse than a Northwestern Gonzaga game, right? You know, that's right out of The Simpsons, man. It's like Krusty the Clown. He's using a freaking ladder. I mean, I don't know, man. Like, really. Like, the dude put his arm through the basket. You're not allowed doing that. Like, and the fact that the referees, like, I don't understand. Like, how did not, like, one of you three jackass clown bozo see this? Like, everybody else saw it. But somehow, instead of, like, cutting the lead to three, Northwestern, oh, no, that's a flagrant. That's a technical. That's a million free throws. And as a Michigan fan, let me tell you, I understand how these technical fouls and free throws can affect an NCAA tournament late in the game, a.k.a. Chris Webber. It's a kiss of death, man. Once that happens, it's the kiss of death. We saw the officials get North Carolina back into the game, and they tried their freaking hardest, man, to get the Duke Blue Devils across the finish line against South Carolina. And you know the ironic thing about that game is if they just didn't care where Bruce Jenner took a leak, that game actually would have been in North Carolina instead of South Carolina, and it would have been a home game for the Gamecocks. But hey, it's a cold-ass world. We're just living in it. Game Time Decisions continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. We are live. I am Gabriel Morenci. The show replays at 5:30 on the television side of things, 5 o'clock on the radio. We encourage those of you to download the radio app or subscribe to the Fantasy Sports Network website. Just $2.99 a month, man. Come on. This show is worth $2.99 a month. All right? Alone, never mind all the other great programming. And if you hate me, then you got a bunch of other great programming. You can't lose. $2.99. Right, so yeah, we got a great show. Coach Nick, he's worth $2.99 alone. Ashley, come on. Ashley's worth $29.99. And Steve Merrill, he says he's worth at least $19.99. What's going on, Steve?
Yeah, I'm a good $20 value.
Yeah, the $19.99 dinner special from Lucky Steve's.
It's like in Vacation back in the early 80s, a great movie, Vacation, when he's driving the family truckster. He goes, if you think you hate it now, when do you drive it? Eugene Levy, he might have been a Canadian. A lot of good Canadians from SCTV days.
Yeah, Canadians owned SCTV. Yeah. All right, let's jump in here. First week of the tournament, first and second round in the books of the tournament. Favorites go 40-12 straight up. I brought this up off the top of the program. Underdogs were 29-23. Against the spread. It started to even out a little bit. The dogs were barking earlier in the tournament. But the theme of the first week of the play were the totals, Steve. 35-16-1 to the over. And that is despite the fact that by Saturday, they started jacking the totals up. All these totals were like 6, 7, 8 points higher than they should have been.
Yeah, of course, the one over I used all weekend was the Kentucky-Wichita State game that went under by like 20 points. So just my luck. But yeah,
you know,
overall,
in that game too, Steve, I bet on fights. I bet on a lot of totals. Sometimes you know you're doomed early. It was one of those games. It was like 9-6, 10 minutes in. You're like, oh, I'm screwed. You know what I mean?
Here's what's funny, though, Gabe, is they had a shot at a three at the last possession that would have sent it to overtime at 130. And the overtime line would have probably been like 18 or 19, a total. When the final closing total was 149. So literally, if he hits that three-pointer at the end instead of it getting blocked, we have almost a 50-50 shot then of winning the over, as sick as
that
would
be. You know that kid, too, and yeah, it's amazing. You're hoping overtime. I've been there, brother. Trust me.
Probably need a double OT, but we had a chance.
Exactly. you know, what's amazing, though, the kid on Kentucky, both the kids on Kentucky jumped up, were in the air. All he had to do was lean in and shoot.
Yeah, I know.
And
I thought
for
about
some
that.
Reason, he waits till they land, and then he tries shooting. And it's true. You know, Reggie Miller used to be the master of that, right? And he used to just lean into you and get away with it all the time. And the NBA, you know, told the officials, stop gratuitously just giving people these lean-in fouls on the threes. But we see it happen on a nightly basis in the NBA. Chris Paul's good at it. Lou Williams is a genius at it. I saw him hit a four-point. I've seen him hit a couple of four-point plays in the last month alone, Lou Williams, or at least, you know, three-point and then the foul by leaning in. And in college, you know, they don't call it as easily the NBA, but it was so blatant. All he had to do is lean in, Steve. You had two guys in the air. They would have had to call him getting the collision.
Yeah, well, I thought about that also, with the chances of him making all three free throws in that situation, very slim.
Yeah, I mean, it's better even, it didn't even, happen for the kid, because otherwise,
yeah, exactly.
Kid would want to kill himself
this
morning.
I think it's better to get blocked than to have the game actually, you know, have a chance to help your team. When you're taking a long-range three with a seven-footer in front of you, you kind of know you don't have a good
nobody
shot.
Nobody remembers this morning anything. God, a kid got blocked. Yeah, whatever. You're right.
No way he would have made all three.
You believe that kid missed the free throw, man, like that? Oh, my God. Like, you're right. He would have been under the hot seat. So the games went over the number. The big shock, obviously, is in the East, Steve. I put together a parlay, the four regional winners. And three of them are still alive. I had Kansas, North Carolina, Arizona, and Villanova. But I told people it was 48-1. I said, I'm a little worried about Villanova because I think Duke could beat them. And if you put Duke in the parlay, then it's 73-1. Yet now Duke is gone, man. So Villanova were the favorites in the plus 160 range. Duke were the second choice in the plus 220 range or so. Both are now gone. Suddenly the Florida Gators are favorites to win the East.
Yeah, it's setting up well for me. In my bracket, I had Florida in the Final Four, actually.
Wow.
And I'd said from day one that this was the most wide-open region, and that's one of the reasons I took a flyer with Florida. I was worried about the Virginia-Florida game, and boy, that looked easy for the Gators. Virginia just can't score. I mean, and I'd said that for a few months now. Offensively, they're just too challenged at times. But I really didn't like Villanova here because I thought either Virginia or Florida could give them a tough game. And then we talked about it last week. Wisconsin was going to be a really tough matchup for anybody. And Villanova had to draw Wisconsin, would have had to either get Florida or Virginia, and then would have had to get probably Duke had they held on. So I never really thought Villanova had a good chance to repeat. And for that reason, I kind of took a flyer with Florida here. I thought Duke would get by South Carolina. That was a surprise. And I'm not big on Baylor. So I had Duke and Florida in the Elite Eight. But this is actually setting up even better for me now because Florida is probably the best team remaining. They don't have to worry about Duke anymore.
You know, my early opinion, though, is that I like Wisconsin in this game. I think that Florida had a favorable matchup against ETSU and then against the Virginia Cavaliers. Gators are a 1.5-point favorite in this. And, you know, Steve, you look at the Sweet 16 and you look at this matchup, it's very football heavy. They're all football schools. I swear, you look at the Sweet 16, it might as well be 16 of the top 20, the AP top 20, Steve. I'm telling you.
Well, it's because no Cinderella's made it this year. I mean, the one Cinderella is Xavier. They don't even have a football program. It just shows you how college sports works. The same teams that are in the running for the national title in football are normally in the national title running for basketball, except for maybe Duke, you know, and they have a decent football program. But it's the rich get richer in these college sports, and there's no question that we have a powerhouse bracket remaining.
All right, Steve. So the South right now, the odds are unchanged here, even though North Carolina got a major scare from Arkansas. It's amazing. They were like minus 110, minus 115 favorites to win this region. The largest favorites out of any group before, and here they still are now at 110. Kentucky's plus 310, UCLA plus 310, Butler plus 750, Carolina are -7.5-point favorites against Butler, UCLA lay one against Kentucky in a battle of blue bloods. That's some big-time stuff right there, Steve, UCLA and Kentucky. Not to mention the NBA draft aspect of Lonzo Ball, De'Aaron Fox, and Malik Monk in the mix going head-to-head.
Yeah, I mean, you arguably have maybe three of the top five teams in the country right now in this bracket. I mean, there's no question that Kentucky and UCLA could win this whole thing. I picked North Carolina when the tournament started. As you know, last Monday we talked about it here on the show. One of the reasons I still like them in this region is that they only have to beat either UCLA or Kentucky, whereas UCLA or Kentucky is going to have to beat one and then also UNC most likely. So yep. These single elimination round robins, a lot of the time it's who you don't have to play as much as who you have to play. Obviously, UNC has a much better Sweet 16 matchup, and they have an easier road to the Elite Eight, and also, therefore, you know, an easier road to the Final Four still.
That's a great point. All right. South Carolina was a big surprise. Michigan is starting to surprise people right now, including me, who I'm a diehard Michigan fan. This team was frustrating earlier in the year. They were deemed a white-collar team by Illinois after the alumni played them. And Michigan worse off. They were on the bubble, but it's all about peaking at the right time, and it's all because of that plane crash. If Michigan, and Michigan played better basketball down the stretch. They did. I think they were like, 6-2 in their last eight or so, 5-1 against six, whatever. They played well down the stretch, but nevertheless, that whole plane crash, their plane crashes at landing, skids off the runway. It was a dangerous situation. The pilots, quick thinking, actually could have saved their lives. They end up going to the Big Ten. They play in Big Ten tourney. They play in practice jerseys. They don't even have their uniforms because they're held up by the FAA and as part of the investigation because who's on the plane. It's just you can't make this stuff up. They go on, they win the Big Ten tournament, and then they get hot against Louisville and beat them down after beating Oklahoma State in a thriller. This team's starting to feel a little magical right now.
No question about it. We see it in sports. I think back to the early 90s. Remember when Utley got hurt with the Detroit Lions? They went on that run and lost in the NFC Championship game to a really good Redskins squad that won it all that year. You kind of get a feeling that Michigan is that team this year. There's always a team that kind of goes on a run or has a reason to go on a run, and all those points you raise make a lot of sense. Michigan does a lot of things well. They have very, very few turnovers. They take a lot of three-point shots. You know, both of those elements, if you're hitting your threes and not turning the ball over, you can win a lot of games in these one-and-done scenarios. With that said, though, you could also lose on any given night when the threes aren't falling. And I think this line has been over-adjusted a bit too much now. Oregon was actually my sleeper pick here in this bracket to make the Final Four. Just like with Florida, I had Oregon in this bracket, and it's really setting up well for me now. I think they have a good shot at getting there as we have Louisville out. And I think also Michigan is a little overrated now. I think Oregon remains a little underrated due to the fact they lost their sixth man before the tournament started. But they still have a lot of talent, a lot of NBA players on that team as well.
I agree with you in a sense that people really did discount the Ducks. And it's funny because I was the cheerleader. I was the charter member of the fan club. I was a big cheerleader of the Ducks over the last month leading into the tournament, before the tournament started. But I was put off by Boucher's injury. The Midwest, it's a tough bracket too, Steve. Oh, my God. You have Michigan, Purdue, and the Ducks. Purdue could give Kansas all that they could handle. In this game, and Purdue's getting five against Kansas, and like you said, it did surprise me though, because clearly the Oregon Ducks had a better season in Michigan, but it's amazing how people are buying into Michigan, and Michigan are actually the favorites.
I was a little surprised to see that as well. I still worry about Kansas here. I think Oregon, obviously Oregon will be an underdog if they make it past Michigan when they play Kansas as well. But I like the fact I have a flyer with Oregon here in Florida in the two brackets, because I doubt many people have that in their Final Four. And if it happens, that's going to catapult me over a lot of people in these contests. Just to tell you how favorite heavy it's been so far, I've got a friend in the ESPN bracket who's at the 99.8 percentile right now. What do you think his position is overall in that tournament, Gabe? I'll give you an over-under. What do you think?
Over-under?
99.8 percentile.
I'm hoping that he's in the top 2,000.
30,000.
These 30,000s.
Top 0.2%, and he's only 30,000th. It just tells you how, there just haven't been many upsets. Everybody has these teams, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
He has Villanova to win it, so he's done. You know, it'll be going downhill from here. But that's my point, is you still have your Final Four, your Elite Eight together. That's what matters here, because everybody has most of these teams still.
All right.
The ones that have Duke or Villanova are the ones that are really in trouble.
Zona and Gonzaga, these guys seem on a collision course. It's interesting. Xavier are the biggest numbers to get to the Final Four right now at 11-1. And Xavier are the longest shot to win it all right now at 45-1. It's interesting. Gonzaga were favored before the tournament started to win the West. But now it's a pick 'em. They're both plus 140.
Yeah, I had Arizona out of this bracket. In my bracket, I had Arizona out of this region to go to the Final Four. But Gonzaga obviously would not surprise. There's just so many question marks about them because they didn't play anybody all season. And they've looked up and down so far in the tournament as well. They've looked good at times. They've looked very mediocre at times. I still like Arizona probably if it comes to that just due to the experience. I think the Pac-12 was really strong this year. It's another reason I like Oregon still, even though they're a little shorthanded. And as I mentioned earlier, I think UCLA is a very good team as well. It's just they have a tough road having to face both Kentucky and UNC probably. But, yeah, Gonzaga could win this whole thing. You know, if you look at, like, KenPom and Zagregan, Gonzaga's the number one team in both those power ratings. But then again, you got to take it with a grain of salt because they didn't play anybody this year.
Gonzaga 6-1 to win it all. I took Kansas before it started at plus 800. They're the second choice right now, plus 550. North Carolina, our favorite to win it all at plus 450. You can get Kentucky or UCLA 10-1. Michigan are now 14-1. All right, Steve, we've got about 3 minutes here, so let's blast through tonight's card. Actually, 11 games on tap, man. We got NIT, CBI, and CIT. Let's go rapid fire. UCF and Illinois State, a team that was probably like the first team out, so to speak. Interesting. Money coming in, though, on the kids from Florida here. UCF, good basketball game tonight, down to 4.5 right now.
Yeah, these are really two of the better teams not to make the tournament. Definitely probably two of the best mid-major teams not to make it.
Yep.
I actually went against Illinois State last Wednesday as a 10-point home favorite with UC Irvine. I thought Illinois State would be very flat after not making the big dance. They still covered and won by double digits. That first game is the one you have to worry about. The fact they got over the hump and now they're playing further into this tournament, I would expect them to do fairly well going forward. But UCF, a very difficult opponent. I would think the winner of this game actually could win the whole thing.
You know what? We should let people know. Illinois State are 16-0 at home. It's a tough game. They're really good at home. In Central Florida, these guys could have beaten teams in the tournament as well. Right. They're a solid team now, 22-11. All right, Akron and UT Arlington. One thing I've noticed, Steve, about this NIT, you know, the crazy stuff with the fouls. They reset the fouls in the second half. Team fouls to zero at the 9:50 mark, 9:30, whatever, 10-minute mark, a little under 10. I think it's like 9:30 or 9:50 of the second half. Anyways, teams get foul crazy early in these games, and UT Arlington put up 105 points on the road against BYU in their last game. Arlington can score. They put up 78 a game. The Zips can put it up. They put up 77 a game. Total's under 53.5. I like the over Akron and Arlington.
Yeah, they always do those, you know, new rules in this. This is when they came up with the 30-second shot clock a few years back, as you'll remember, Gabe, and that really increased scoring. It's tricky for the odds maker. You look at the Illinois State game, the total opened 122. It's 128.5 now. This Akron game, the total opened 152. It's 153.5 now. So the money's definitely been coming in the over today.
There's heavy, heavy fouls. I've been watching the NIT. Teams know this. Why wouldn't they, right? Now, that we should note, the players don't get reset, so the players can still foul out. But the coaches are playing the bench and stuff earlier, and it's a foul fest. So especially take a look at the first half overs, guys. I've been watching the NIT. Yesterday, Iowa and Oregon, it was like 16-14, 5 minutes into the game. It was like, what the hell's going on here?
Well, Gabe, one thing about those first half lines, keep in mind in college basketball, the second half is almost 5 to 10 points higher than the first half line because of all the fouling. So that's really tricky for the odds makers. If all of a sudden we start to see more fouling in the first half, it's going to drastically change those first half lines.
It is. It is tricky. All right. So Boise, we got about a minute and a half here, Steve. Boise State at Illinois. Interesting with Illinois. They fire their coach. I didn't know how they would respond to that. Then they waxed Valpo, though Valpo was out their best player. Now they're laying 8.5. I think the number's too high here against Boise State. I think there'll be some points up on the board here, too. Total's 145.5. And, of course, Illinois hired Oklahoma State's Brad Underwood. Great job, coach. Your team loses to Michigan, and you're on a plane to Illinois after the game, essentially, leaving your kids to hang to dry. They're laying 8.5. Total's 145. I think the point spread's a little high here.
Yeah, you're talking about uncertainty. This is like handicapping a college bowl game with the coach situation. I've never seen anything like this in a postseason college basketball tournament, actually. The total here again, 142.5. It's up to 145.5. As you said, it's gone up 3 points today. If you have some uncertainty in a playground mentality and a lack of coaching, that probably helps the over as well.
For the record, they're keeping the guy that's coaching. The assistant guy that's in place tonight, Underwood said he wants to keep him. That doesn't mean he's going to stay. He might get an offer somewhere else, but he's part of the family, so to speak. We got to get out of here, but interesting stats, Steve, NBA. Pacers have alternated wins and losses in their last 13 games. Like, you can say, all right, after four or five games, what does it mean? 13 straight games, they've alternated wins and losses coming off a loss, which means they would win tonight against the Jazz.
Well, two-point home dog means there's a 45% chance that continues. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'm not trusting it. I just figured I'd throw it out there for people.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Gabe.
All right, Coach Nick joins us next. We'll talk some NBA prospects. All right, I'm fired up. We got Coach Nick to talk some basketball. We got Ashley Dawkins joining us in studio in a couple of minutes. We'll talk some NBA DFS. But let's bring in B-Ball Breakdowns, Coach Nick, right now. It's always a pleasure talking hoops with Nick. And normally we talk NBA basketball, Coach, but I want to shake things up a little bit. We'll sort of combine the NCAA tournament with the association a little bit. You're one of the best follows on Twitter, and your instant analysis and video breakdowns second to none, Coach. So I know you've been paying attention to what's going on in the tournament. As someone who watches the NBA all the time, what sticks out? What do you like or dislike about watching a college game right now, Coach?
Oh, well, the first thing, I can't stand on the timeouts. There's too many of those, but let's put that aside for a second. The refereeing is also really not good. That's really frustrating as well, because when I watch a ton of college, that's the first thing I take away. And it makes it hard to figure out what these players can do because the refs are so bad.
Yeah, the refs are real bad. There's a huge difference, isn't there? Like I said, I joked off the top. It's like the episode of The Simpsons with Krusty the Clown when he bets against the Globetrotters. Come on, he's using a freaking ladder, man. The kid on Gonzaga punched his arm through the basket.
Like, right.
You can't see that, ref. Like, at what point do we have a problem here? But how about traveling, though? You could take NBA guys, put them in the NCAA tournament. They couldn't play because they get called for traveling every 2 seconds.
Oh, I know. And by the way, it's not great in the NBA, but at the very least, we're seeing what perceived travels. Like, they're not traveling, but they just sort of quickly assume, like, at the high school level, oh, that's got to be a travel. And I did one on Twitter where slowed it down.
Yeah.
The guy's pivot foot never moved, but, like, you know, it just didn't look right to him or something, and they just called it. And it really is a problem, and it doesn't seem like it's getting any better. The block charge, too. Oh, my goodness. I can't take those either.
Yeah, I know. I saw your video about that. The kid was setting up for three, and he decided not to shoot. And you're right. Like, yeah, it was unorthodox, and he sort of took a little stutter step, but it wasn't traveling. And,
right.
Yeah, they're quick on it, but they call what they think, you know, like a push from the back. A kid dove the other day, and, you know, in the Michigan game, Oklahoma State, kid poked the ball, man. Great defensive play. It's like they punished defensive players. He got all ball. He poked it at half court, and they called a foul on him. But I wanted to talk about some of the big-time players. So Markelle Fultz is a kid that, you know, sort of the consensus number one. I don't know. Would you buy into that? Do you think he should be the consensus number one? Is Fultz better than all these guys in the tournament right now?
I mean, I totally get it, that why you'd say that. He's very polished. He's got a really great game. He's not like a really pure point guard. He's a little bit smaller than like a shooting guard would be. But he's, you know, as polished as a freshman as you'll find. So he's going to be a really good pro. He'll fit in really well probably wherever he goes. I'm not quite sold that he should be the number one pick. I think that Lonzo Ball, because he's longer and maybe a little bit more explosive, would lend itself to being a better pro. But you can't really go wrong with Markelle Fultz. He's really got a great package. The only thing we haven't really seen is his defensive ability. And he played on a bad team, and that could very well sort of be a thing where it just wasn't, you know, they weren't giving out as much as they could have because of the situation. They fired the coach. So, you know, I would imagine if he gets in the court with four other pros, he'll start giving out more and we'll see some more defensive ability. But I think he's still limited compared to, like, Ball, who's just longer and more explosive and quicker.
Lonzo Ball. So his father seems to be a pretty selfish guy, you know, trying to steal the spotlight from his son right now. But Lonzo is anything but selfish on the court. He's a guy, and I guess if you're a coach and you're a franchise organization, the key is making other people around you better. And it seems like everyone's just better around Lonzo Ball. Is a fair comparison, and I'm talking about a huge upside here, is a Jason Kidd type of player in Lonzo Ball? Is that a fair comparison?
Yeah, offensively, I've been comparing him to Jason Kidd a lot. Although, let's not forget, Kidd did not shoot nearly this well for years at the same junction of their lives. So he's a better shooting Jason Kidd. Now, the other side of the thing is that Kidd was much better on defense. I mean, dominating on defense from the get-go. And we haven't really seen that from Ball. You know, he's good, and he's got the ability. He's got fast twitch muscles, and he can really move and laterally, too. So I think he's got that ability to get there.
And the culture of the team probably doesn't help him, Coach, right? It's not like he's asked to play defense. Like UCLA as a whole, they don't play defense.
Right, right. They haven't. Yeah, they don't have a taskmaster. They're not really teaching. They're not stressing it. But you know, he definitely has. He has the tools more so than other guards who are like the 6'3", 6'4", range. This kid's like legit 6'6", 6'7", long arms. That's going to really help him on defense.
I find it interesting that there's people are very critical about Josh Jackson and his shooting ability. Oh yeah, he hit 29% in this month, and he only shot 32% in this month. His shooting has gotten better, but I think back to Kawhi Leonard and somebody that I'm a big Steve Fisher guy. So therefore, I watch a lot of Aztec basketball. So I remember Kawhi in college, and he was raw as, you know, as they come. And I remember telling people, like in his first year or two in the NBA, I said, mark my words, he'll be like a scorer in the NBA eventually if he wants to be. It's just he's an all-around player. You can teach a guy to shoot, can't you? As the years go on, and it seems like Jackson is just the complete package that is built for the NBA.
I mean, I could see on the book's cover why everyone would say that, because he certainly looks the part, but I'm kind of worried, because if he's the third best player in this draft, then this draft isn't as deep as I would think. But I think what everyone is saying is the potential where he could go to eventually in 3 or 4 years can then be why you drafted him so high. As of right now, I mean, I guarantee you there's other upperclassmen who are better than him, are more polished and have better ability. But there's no question that he has some tools. And you think like Wiggins, or you can, of course, you're thinking Kansas and Long Kid or like that kind of thing. And it's clear to me why he doesn't shoot well. And it's really simple. He doesn't have his elbow and his arm locked into the right angle early enough. And then also his wrist is not cocked back early enough. So he's doing all this extra work as the ball is on its way up to the release. Of course, you're not going to be consistent that way. It's going to go up and down, up and down. Easily fixable in one summer if he gets in the gym and works on it.
Very interesting. All right, player, I'm really interested in your take on this kid, because I'm fascinated by this kid, Lauri Markkanen, on the Arizona Wildcats. Big 7-foot Finnish prospect. Not a lot, you know, hockey. They play hockey in Finland, and they downhill ski and like ski jump, or cross country ski and ski jump. But Lauri Markkanen, 7-footer, polished kid, competitor, good kid, smart kid, real competitor. Slick under the basket, and it's funny, he works on his game. They were like, you got to work on your outside shot. He did. You got to get a little tougher under the paint. In the paint, he did. Complete package, and I hate, it's always a comparison. Let's compare the white guy to every other white guy.
Here comes Dirk.
Yeah, but he is, and Kristaps Porzingis as well. Sort of this modern, a lot of these new guys, these Ilyasova, these modern players, they can step back, big guys that can pop a three. He can do that. What's your take as far as marketing the NBA potential is concerned? I was reading one scout, said can't miss, superstar, going to play in the NBA for 12 years. Other guys said, you know, he's sort of a sixth man that's going to pick and pop off the bench, which I thought was, that was a little less than what he could bring. What's your take?
Well, you know, he's a legit 7-footer, and he might even grow a little bit more. He's still young. So Dirk is not a bad comparison, but I think he's a better athlete than Dirk is.
Yep.
And certainly Porzingis is a little bit different. He's a different athlete as well there. He's almost more like a wing player. at 7 feet, which is a really big advantage for him, certainly in the college level, so he can finish nicely either hand. It won't be as easy when he gets into the pros because those defenders are going to be a lot bigger, but I don't see why not. He's got a beautiful stroke from outside, really, and that's really going to help him. So I would be surprised if he didn't do well. Now, he's also too thin, and he's going to have to develop a lot more strength and balance on that end, and if he can do that, it might be a year or two, but I think that he can be a really legit pro.
All right, Nick, I wish we had time to get to Jason Tatum because he's a fun player as well. But enjoy the tournament. It's always a pleasure, man. I always love talking basketball with you, Coach. Thanks a lot for taking the time to be with us. Keep up the great work.
You got it. I'm in.
There's Coach Nick with us. All right, we go from Coach Nick to Ashley Docking, who, I don't know. We'll see what Ashley brings to the table. She's already distracted our cameraman here, but she is a very lovely lady, right? Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues, and normally this would be my opportunity to take a pot shot at the woman that's sitting next to me, but Ashley is our special guest today, so we're going to treat her with nothing but kindness and respect. Always a pleasure, Ashley.
Hi, that's throwing me off. I came on ready to throw punches, and you're being nice, so I feel like there's an ulterior motive that's coming up.
No, I have no ulterior. No, I'm not going to ask you for a loan.
To cover
I
one
would,
of your bets.
I would, but I know how much you make, so I'm, you know.
My heart. I don't know if that's burn on me or what.
I'm kidding. All right, Ashley. So thoughts on the NCAA tournament. Last week, I saw you were very excited. You were discussing how you were involved in many pools, including with your family.
Yep.
How's your brackets coming along?
I'm first out of everyone in my family. So we do this pool called I Don't Know Anything About Basketball. It's been going on for like 15 years. It's like a bunch of my mom's coworkers, but it's grown throughout the years. And I'm the first place out of my family. I think I'm third overall or something like that. I got absolutely screwed, as did most people, when Villanova was out, Duke was out. But that kind of actually saved people, I think, when Duke went out, because I feel like kind of that bracket is just a wash now, so you don't even have to really worry about it.
Yeah, once it's true, everyone's like, oh, I can't believe it. I should have taken Duke instead of Villanova, and then boom,
gone.
They're gone.
So it's fine if someone took Florida or whatever.
Yeah, Steve Merrill. That's why he's a covers expert,
okay.
Right?
Okay, yeah.
So cool. Here I got Florida going to my Final Four.
Well, then he's lucky.
They're going to lose to Wisconsin.
It's few and far between, exactly. Wisconsin's someone who's dangerous as well. So on the other side, the Midwest and the South, still pretty strong. Feel pretty good about it.
So you're more of an NBA girl than a college, although you played the game, so you're a big basketball junkie all around. But you watch more NBA basketball during
100%.
The regular season
yeah.
than you do the college game.
Yeah.
I was just talking with Coach Nick about this, and he said the thing that bothers him the most are the constant timeouts. The fact that they call the timeouts every 4 minutes, right? You have the team. Because that's the thing. People don't realize this. And the coaches coach the games like this.
Yeah.
In 4 minutes, they coach 4 minute games. So it's win 4 minutes at a time. See, you don't look at it like a big game if you're an underdog.
Well, they don't get the quarter time as well because they have two halves, so they need to kind of interject a little bit. And they're younger, right? So you don't have the people that necessarily have the intelligence that can make changes on the fly, or the coach can just convey a message to one guy. He can let everyone know.
Being going
need
to a smarter school
it a
doesn't help,
bit.
As we saw the kid at Vanderbilt that decided to foul.
Oh, that was so heartbreaking. You got
to
know the score and the time.
All right, but what's the thing that bothers you the most about the college game, or you like or dislike as opposed to the NBA?
So I know everyone says March Madness is the best kind of basketball that they ever get to enjoy throughout the year, but when you actually watch it, the thing that really made me upset this year so far, there's some terrible games. Just the jumping under the basket. Right when a shot goes up and a rebound, there's no one that necessarily clearly collects it and makes a pump fake, a power move to go up. It's just all these kids like trying to tip tap it in. Like it's
like
sloppy.
A game of war. Like you remember like on the playground?
Yeah.
When it's just wild, you got like six guys and it's like just one
every
on
man
one.
For themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, six, one on six.
Yeah, yeah.
One
and everyone should go out for the rebound.
That's
and
kind
stuff.
Of how I feel about it. I think the one thing that people get kind of carried away with is the storylines, which is a great part of the tournament.
That's what they're selling.
But that's exactly it. That's not the actual basketball.
And you notice
so if you go
it's all
watch
about
an
the
NBA
coaches.
Game, if you go watch an NBA game after the fact, you're like, oh, that's what basketball is.
Yeah,
okay.
You notice it's all about the coaches in college.
They
too.
Have a major part in it.
Because the Jim Nances of the world that go to dinner with the coaches, right? The kids are just secondary, but
or the parent cutaways.
Oh,
like how many times
big,
did we see Elaine?
They're big on that.
How many times did we see Elaine
they're
during that Northwestern game?
But it is true, and as somebody that watches, I watch basketball every day. So this happens to me all the time. I watch like all day college basketball, like even during the regular season on a Sunday. And then Sunday night, I watch an NBA game. And it's like, you know, I'm like, holy crap, these guys are making everything, right? Like,
yeah.
It's like swish, swish through, like, yeah. Left and right. All right, quick on the NBA as far as the Raptors are concerned. They won last night. They're a weird team right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they look good one night, and they'll blow somebody out. But then you can't get fooled by a win with the Raptors right now. You know this team. You've been around them.
Yeah.
Over the last couple of years. What's wrong? Like, the body language is off. DeMar DeRozan used to smile all the time. He doesn't.
He seems
sour.
He's missing his best friend.
Nah, but
he's
still.
He's missing his best friend.
Yeah, we're all missing something, all right?
Oh, like, let's not go there, Gabe. We only have a few minutes for this segment.
Is it Dwayne Casey? Is he lost
know.
The room?
Really,
like, what's going on with his team?
I really like Dwayne Casey as a coach, and I think that the Raptors are committed to him long-term. At least they seem to be. It seems like they're trying to create San Antonio culture,
yes.
Where you just have someone that you know you can rely on is going to be there, those constants. Obviously, Kyle Lowry being out until the end of the regular season is a huge issue because now you have to rely on Corey Joseph, DeLon Wright to spot
minutes. Remember Kyle said, I know what's wrong, but I'm not going to say.
Yeah.
They haven't been happy campers in a couple of months.
But him and Dwayne Casey just have kind of, I don't want to say a tumultuous relationship where they don't like each other, but they bump heads a lot. Kyle Lowry is a fiery guy, and coaches are control freaks.
Well, that's why he's been on a couple of different teams, and that's why he fell in the draft. It's funny, I saw a piece with Jay Wright, the Villanova coach, who said, you know, they went to war. He goes, this kid was one of the most difficult kids ever. Now Kyle thanks him after the fact. Mm-hmm. But it's funny, Jay Wright, you never should have met with Buffalo Bills head coach Sean McDermott before the game. Villanova played in Buffalo.
Yeah.
There's a picture of McDermott and Jay Wright talking before the game. It's like, dude, why don't you just go vacation in the Bermuda Triangle now? Like, you're going to hang around with the Buffalo Bills head coach, like, before a championship game? It's not a preseason game.
Yeah, you don't really.
Yeah, he was tainted by the stench of, like, death and loss. That is Buffalo. All right, NBA DFS tonight.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Harden and Westbrook both playing. Do you like to spend money on the big stars, or do you like to attack and try to get 2-for-1 for the money that you would spend on one player?
I think when it's these guys that are the big stars, you have to have at least one of them in your lineup, maybe even two, depending on the injury situation that's happening in the league that day.
If there's a lot
of starters that are injured, getting rest, things like that, and you can kind of bump up the scrubs portion with guys that are going to get the minutes.
Today, there really isn't a million ton.
No,
there's not a lot of scrubs.
You have to have one of them, though, I think, because if you're going to have someone like Westbrook who's averaging, 60, 70 DK points a game, and you're going to go up against someone in a tournament, how are you going to beat them without those points with one person? Two people might get you that. Three people will.
That's a good point.
You can't.
You know what, though? I've got Jameer Nelson and Victor Oladipo as two guards. That's $11,000.
Yeah. And are they going to get you 60 fantasy points?
They could get me 55. Listen,
but
when you put
not,
it like this.
They're not.
Yeah. What do you mean they're not? You don't know that.
I just told you they're not.
No, they are.
You can put it on record.
This is
they're
like going
not.
Back to our head-to-head that days before.
No, I would never have those two on my roster.
All right. Jameer Nelson put up 43 DraftKings points on Saturday night.
One time?
No. He's been playing well since he's been getting minutes.
But the question was...
He's playing the Houston Rockets tonight.
The question was...
Yes, for $5,500, I'm taking the 43 points. Now you're upsetting me.
I don't mind that game, but
genius. What do you like?
I like Will Barton, actually, and I know that he's a favorite of yours.
Yeah,
you played him the other night.
Yeah,
and
I call him Will Baby Bump Barton.
Will Baby Bump Barton.
That was the best. Remember when he walked off the court? Some guy was sitting courtside and had
a baby. Yeah.
And Will Barton,
taps the baby.
You know, he fist bumped the baby. Like, he stopped and, like, it was the slickest thing ever. I hear where you're going with that.
Just because, I was torn between him, and I do like Gary Harris as well. The problem that you could run into with Harris is if he gets the assignment of guarding James Harden, he could be in some foul trouble because we know Harden is at the line at least 10 times a game. It feels like he nearly lives there.
Harden went for 40, 10, and 10 against these guys on Saturday.
Yeah, so if you're going to have the main defensive assignment being James Harden, then I don't know if Gary Harris is the way to go, but Will Barton, 35 points versus the Clippers. But then on Saturday, he had 10 points, 1-for-9 shooting from three. We know he's going to get the looks. Is he going to hit them? I doubt he'll go 1-of-9 again.
No, we got to get out of here. But between Westbrook and Harden, I'd go with Harden because of the matchup. Golden State are actually holding teams. They're playing good defense. They're, you know, teams only score like 92 points a game against these guys recently. Harden's like, he's just a freaking monster.
James Harden?
All right, we got to get out of here, but you like Ilyasova. I have him in my lineup.
I do like Ilyasova as well.
Only $5,000 and...
Millsap's out.
Yeah, Millsap is out. Dwight Howard actually has been putting up big fantasy numbers too. We're going to come back with our lineup if Ashley approves of that. All right, it's time for some NBA DFS action. Let's hit it. We're going to start off here with Jameer Nelson. I don't care what Ashley Docking says about my boy Jameer Nelson. I can't believe I'm actually playing Jameer Nelson. I can't believe that Jameer Nelson's still playing in the NBA, truth be told. But I'll tell you what, he put up 43 DK points on Saturday night against the Houston Rockets. And who are they playing tonight? Oh, yeah, the Houston Rockets. He's $5,500. So basically, he just needs to give us 27.5 points to give us five times the value. He's going to do that. He's going to give us six, seven, maybe hopefully eight times the value. We know it's going to be a track meet. This is, you know, I'm rolling a dice here, and I guarantee he's not going to be heavily owed. I'm taking Jameer Nelson again. Klay Thompson. Klay Thompson's been heating up. They're taking on the... They're taking on the Oklahoma City Thunder here tonight. Thompson's been heating up from behind the arc. He's hit 13 of his last 24 three-point shots. I like him tonight at $7,200. Gordon Hayward. You know what I like about this spot with Hayward? He was born in Indianapolis. It's his homecoming. He doesn't play there that often. He's coming back. He was literally born right in Indianapolis. And who did Gordon Hayward play for in college? Oh, yeah, Butler. What did Butler do? Oh, yeah, Sweet 16. Life's good for Hayward. He's going back. His team, Butler from Indianapolis as well. They're going to be, you know, it's just, it's all synergy here. I think that he goes off tonight. His scoring's a little down, actually, in a month of March. He's only scoring like 18 points a game as opposed to the 22, 23 he normally puts up. But I expect him to get on track here tonight. I'm expecting a big night for Hayward tonight in his hometown. Ilyasova. This one is Ashley Dockett approved. Great price here, man. Millsap is out. Put up 37 points in his place the other night versus the Blazers. 4-for-5 from three-point land. No doubt he's going to give us more than 25 DK points here. DeAndre Jordan crushed the Knicks for 28 points, 15 boards, and two blocks earlier this year. He's put up at least 40 DK points in three of his last four games with a 50 and a 59 outburst in there. No Porzingis either, which means we're going to play Lance Thomas. We're playing Victor Oladipo. Oladipo's played three times against the Warriors this year. He's averaging 20 points a game. Lance Thomas continues to put up nice numbers when Porzingis is out. For $4,300, going to give us 25 points or so. And Vucevic is a freaking monster. Our picks. Give me the Philadelphia 76ers plus 5. Let's go over 214.5 with the Sixers and the Magic. Wizards and Celtics. Last two times they played, it was track meets. Let's make it 3-for-3 over the number. Akron and Arlington. Paying attention to the NIT, it's a foul fest. They reset the fouls at the 10-minute mark of the second half. Let's go over 153. Rice beats Utah Valley. We'll lay to 4.5. Boise State Broncos getting 8.5. Too many points. We're going to go over 145.5. In that game, Bakersfield, Colorado State over 130. Bruins beat the Leafs. And Puerto Rico, listen, I don't like it at minus 220. Put it in a parlay or something. It's a little high, but they are going to beat the Netherlands. May the winners be yours.